Thanks. Great session so far. So I'd like to acknowledge a large number of co-authors. It's a big team that's working on this, both at our University at Colorado State, as well as folks at NRCS and ARS. So I think there's been quite a bit of discussion. I want to follow up, though, in terms of really why are we interested in this whole farm greenhouse gas accounting? And a number of reasons have been alluded to earlier, but I think first and foremost, our direct interest working with USDA is to find a way for them to be able to incorporate greenhouse gas mitigations in their conservation programs in as effective way as possible. And so there's a lot of infrastructure there in terms of NRCS and Farm Services Organization working with individual producers really at the farm scale. Secondly, and there's also been discussion about this today, there's growing interest in kind of a green labeling for agricultural products where we might want to establish footprints of greenhouse gas emissions associated with a particular product. And so the work that we're doing is really looking at just the production side of that, but it could be combined with upstream and downstream components for a full life cycle analysis. And then there's been quite a bit of discussion here as well about the participation in carbon and greenhouse gas offset markets. And I think one thing that we'll see increasingly in the future, whether it be with current voluntary markets or future cap and trade policies, that because there's lots of processes going on at the farm and different emission sources, that we'll really have to be able to look at the net impacts of a range of practices in terms of the total greenhouse gas effect. So if that's our goal, then what kind of attributes are important for an effective greenhouse gas mitigation system? And first of all, of course, we need to have accuracy and precision as good as we can make it. We're never going to be as good as some sectors. We might as well admit that. We don't have a nice meter we can put in the top of a smokestack and measure concentrations very accurately, but you know we need to do the best that we can and have good estimates. And it probably as important as anything is really to be able to know or have a good idea of what the uncertainty in those estimates are. We need systems applicable for the entire U.S., but also they need to be locally specific. We know there's lots of heterogeneity out there that we need to capture. They have to be flexible. We're looking at very complex sets of management decisions, so we need to be able to integrate those. Obviously, cost effective, particularly if we're looking at offsets or participation in programs. We can't have systems that require very large measurement and monitoring costs relative to the value being produced. And it's also, I think it's important that we have systems that can be applied consistently across spatial scales so that, for example, the sum of project level scale activities could be consistent with estimates that are, say, reported at the national level. So potential approaches, direct measurements are great, but as we all know, certainly at the farm scale, they can be very costly, and I think as Neville pointed out, they're really not feasible for many source categories. We're not able to go out with our N2O meter and hold it in the, hold it up and get a measurement. So I think there's also probably QA/QC concerns with measurement, particularly at farm scales in a programmatic sense. Broad practice-based defaults, this has been the system, say, in the CCX, that the problems there are certainly that I think in general they, on a comparative sense, they lack rigor because they're not really able to incorporate some of that fine-scale heterogeneity. They're also probably have a low efficiency in terms of a policy. You often would get sort of the poorer performers that would be participating in a sort of an average program, if you will. And there's also, I think, some problems with credibility with outside stakeholders. So I guess our position is really that we're working towards is trying to develop systems that are farm-specific, use models, but also, and use process-based models, but ones that are supported by coordinated measurement resources to improve the accuracy and uncertainty. And so these systems, we think, are able to provide a good, acceptable level of accuracy ultimately, and also incorporate the field scale conditions and variability that we find out there in the landscape and make it possible to have efficient and inexpensive policy implementation. So the main thing I'm going to talk about today is a new system we're working on. It's called Comet Farm. It builds off of the Comet VR online system, which we've developed several years ago, that basically focuses on soil carbon, and now we're also incorporating some other soil and biomass in the new version of Comet VR. But Comet Farm really takes a quite a different approach. It's really a kind of a major step in a somewhat different direction, in the sense that it really is based on this full farm level accounting, soil biomass, carbon stocks, N2O, livestock emissions, and as well as energy. I think one of the more advanced components is this use of a spatial interface, and we're also able to hook in with the development of new things like the NRCS web services, the web soil survey, energy use tools. So we're trying to really integrate those different components. Kind of an overview of how the system looks. I'll try to go through this pretty quickly, but basically we have a system that's designed to be used by the producer. And so really the key component of this, I think in many ways, is the design of the web interface. As you can see down here, then really the user provides inputs on all these three sectors that deal with the field operations, livestock, fossil input sectors. And so the system is also supported by geospatial databases for soils, climate, et cetera, that drive the process-based estimates. We're also working on incorporating remote sensing into the system so that we'll be able to use those kind of resources to provide information on the vegetation cover and surface characteristics to, again, trying to drill down and get more confidence at the individual site level. Also different than Comet VR is that the Descent model is now going to be the primary engine in the system. Harold and others, I think, have mentioned a little bit about the Descent now. We're also, though, for some of the other emission sources, we'll be using kind of an emission factor approach for the livestock, et cetera. And then for the uncertainty estimator, we're building off of what we've currently implemented in Comet VR, which is basically a uncertainty estimator that is based on long-term field experiment results. But a new component of that is we're going to embed a Monte Carlo process in the system as part of the uncertainty estimator in the Comet Farm system. So right now we've got some of the system working, but not all of it. But once you log in, you can go in and log in. Didn't really have time to show all that, but you can go in, register, and then fairly quickly you get you can basically decide if you want to look at an individual emission sector, or if you want to go through your entire farm, your entire operation, and do a full accounting. Once you've made that selection, you basically come into a sort of a Google Map type geographic interface, and you can either select your state and county, or you can play with the tools over here and zoom down and find your farm. Once you've found your farm, you can scale this at really whatever scale is convenient. If you were working on say a large ranch or something, you might have a slightly coarser view to get a much larger area. But basically, come down to the resolution that that is suitable for illustrating your systems. You can then go through and delineate individual fields either by defining a polygon or by adding a point. And if you add a point, then you specify the area associated with that particular field. Or if you do a polygon, then of course the system would integrate and track the area associated with that. I mentioned before the web soil survey, so the system then actually brings in from the web soil survey a Sergo level soil coverage. And so you can see up here If you've designated this particular field, you have two different soil map units illustrated here. So the system is going to do calculations separately for these two components of the field, which have the different soil types there. You can also, if you're working in the interface, you can basically click on a soil map unit, get some information up about the attributes there. So once you've outlined your field systems and what areas you want to look at, you can then go in and define the management. And we have a couple of pages that do this. First is to define sort of the previous land use history, which is used in essentially initializing the system. And you can see here we've got basically a system in here that tracks where you've completed the management inputs for individual units on the landscape. For the historical management, we're using the same kind of system we have in Comet VR, which is a set of pull-down menus. So you go and you find the rotation, the tillage type, whether you've participated in CRP, for sort of predefined management periods. So longer-term historical management up to 1980, post-1980 to 2000. So this is very similar to the way the Comet system works, and you basically have to choose what's available there. What's quite new now in the Comet VR is we've made this for a couple of reasons. One is to add maximum flexibility. We've essentially structured the user input so both in the baseline period, which is 2000 onwards, as well as in the scenario prediction period, the user can go in and can specify their precise management on that particular field. So you can see we've got a timeline here, in this case 2000 to 2010. And basically then you can select particular crops. It could be more than one crop in a year. And then once you've selected a crop, you can go down and specify the management details for that particular year and that particular crop. So you can really have any sort of a historic rotation, what you actually performed on that particular piece of land. And then the same thing for the projection. You have the opportunity to define what the projection period is. So I did some examples, a quick example to show to give the idea of looking at sort of a greenhouse gas balance for a whole farm. Looking here with dryland cropland about 600 hectares, irrigated cropland 200 hectares. If the baseline management was, for example, wheat fallow under conventional till, irrigated corn, conventional till, 200 kilograms of N, and then putting in as improved management things like on part of the land going to a corn wheat fallow under no-till, conservation reserve program on 200 hectares, and then converting the corn from continuous corn to a corn alfalfa under no-till, applying nitrogen with nitrification inhibitors. So these are all components that are incorporated in the system. And so basically then we can also look at the fuel usage associated with those practices on those areas and come up then with an estimate of a change from the baseline conditions, in this case of about 195 tons of carbon as an emission, to a decrease relative to that of about 2,000 tons on this 600 hectare area. I'll mention real briefly also a little bit about the livestock system. Right now we've got essentially what you'd call a tier one livestock system, so that basically you go in, identify your livestock categories, you then enter by sex and age categories what the livestock population is over the course of the year. You're queried on some information on what kind of a breed you have, typical mature weight. You can change that or use a default value for that. And then the type of manure management system or systems that you're using for that component of your livestock system. So this really follows off of the IPCC type of approaches. So right now it's quite simple then. At the tier one level. In terms of next steps, one of the things we're working on for the livestock emissions is to do essentially a tier two plus, in that we've got Sean Archibek, who's in our animal science department, who's working on basically new models to look at managing feed and feed additives to get an estimate of how that impacts enteric emissions. One of the things we also want to include down the road is to build in the capability to estimate the commodity production as well as the greenhouse gas emissions, so that we can derive essentially a commodity or a greenhouse gas efficiency, if you will. So this is very important. You know, how much product are you getting per unit of emissions? Some other things that we're doing are mentioned up here. I think one of the more important things over the next several months is going to be testing with farm and agency user groups, particularly with NRCS. And then we'll have an initial version of this released in the spring, but that probably won't be the end of our work on it. But I'd happy to take any questions if I left any time. Okay, let's take it.
Yeah. When it comes to soil,
right,
you must look at some database. And what I've seen, let's go to a stat go, typically give you a range.
Right.
The area where we are can tell you 2% to 4%. And the outcome of going with 2% or 4% could be very different.
Yeah, that's a good point. Well, first I would say so Web Soil Survey is giving you the most detailed soils information that's available. So it's more Surgo. I think they still would probably be reporting, and maybe, I don't know, if Carolyn or Greg, you're in the audience. I think Surgo also gives some of the attributes in terms of ranges. Of course, the main things we're using are things like soil texture, soil depth, rooting depth. You know, essentially we're going to use the mean attributes that are given for that soil unit. We thought a little about, do you make that available for the user to change if they know their soil better than NRCS Web Soil Survey does? That would be a possibility, but at least for now we're going to be using the values that are in the soil map unit descriptions.
Okay.